Hi, welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. This is Hyung Nam, and I'm with Effie Baum with Popular Mobilization. Hi, Effie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. And can you tell us a little bit about Popular Mobilization or PopMob?
Sure. Popular Mobilization, it came together following the increased violence we witnessed at the last Patriot Prayer Rally on June 30th. And so a group of folks came together with the idea of trying to form a group that would inspire people to show up in mass to oppose the alt-right. And we're a diverse group that come from all walks of life. There's people who work in education, healthcare, food service workers, union workers. And so we wanted to kind of form this diverse group to reach out to all of our communities and really motivate people to show up in mass. Because as we saw in Boston last year, when people show up in large numbers, we have a better chance of drowning out their rhetoric of hate and avoiding the violence that we saw on June 30th.
Great, thank you. And for those who may not have the full background, can you just give us a concise kind of summary of what this event was last week, who these people behind Patriot Prayer was on their side and these Proud Boys and so on, and who the counter-protesters were that showed up?
Sure. So Patriot Prayer was started by a man named Joy Gibson who lives in Vancouver. He's not even an Oregonian. And he originally started by protesting the cancellation of a parade on 82nd Avenue following threats of protest for that parade. And so that was the first free speech rally that he had, and the one that was attended by Jeremy Christian, who then just weeks later went on to murder 2 out of 3 men who stood up to him on the MAX train when he was verbally assaulting 2 women of color, one of whom was wearing a head covering. And following that, Joey Gibson had planned a free speech rally for downtown on June 4th of last year, and the city and community asked him to cancel it. But in a move that shows a lot of callous disregard for the lives that were lost and the victims of that harassment, he proceeded to have that event anyway. Since then, he has continued to hold these rallies all up and down the West Coast, and he associates with groups such as the Proud Boys, who have recently been designated as a hate group and are a group of violent Western chauvinists, as they call themselves, who relish in street violence and beating up anybody who opposes their viewpoints. He's also had rallies that are attended by very prominent members of white supremacist and neo-Nazi groups here in Portland.
And it seems like one of the things that they try to get away with is saying that they're not racist and they'll always bring some token person of color to be among them, but they're clearly associating with known neo-Nazis and racists from all over the country that they bring out to their events and fully embrace and do things like chant. They were chanting when they were coming to Occupy ICE, talking about smashing, or maybe that was June 30th, smashing immigrants' heads to the sidewalk and things like that. But then yet they always claim that they're not the ones that are violent and they're only interested in free speech.
Right. And I think that if you go back and you look at all of the things that Joey Gibson said and then you compare them to the actions, you will find a immense amount of dissonance between what comes out of his mouth and what actually happens. This is also very evident if you look at his failed Senate run and the points that he has on his website as his platform. One of the things he says is that he supports gay marriage, but yet then he shows up at Pride with the Hellshaking Street Preachers, a well-known anti-LGBTQ group that's also headed by a very well-known and vocal white supremacist. So his couching of his activities in this free speech and wrapping it in a flag and like praying to a Christian God falls very short when you actually look at the actions he involves himself in.
Yeah, and I understand that with the most recent event, he actually moved the location for the event because he wanted it to be open carry. And he clearly said that he's usually armed and he's bringing people who are armed. But then some news came out at the last minute saying that his Washington permit to conceal and carry was not good here. And it could have been true for some of his buddies that he was, you know, bringing in from all over the country. And one of the things that I found is that actually he was not able to conceal and carry even in Washington for a while, because he had a felony conviction for theft a while back, too.
One thing I think that is interesting is he no longer seems to have any employment. This seems to be his full-time gig. And when he was first coming out as a figure on the scene, I saw several references to him being a former pro wrestler, which I don't know a whole lot about that, but I find really interesting because I think that the theatrics and violence that he foments at all of these events is very consistent with that kind of incredibly toxic masculinity mm-hmm. that is associated with the violence in wrestling events for entertainment. And it seems that he is still just a child trying to get attention by acting out.
Yeah. And then the other thing too that I've always wondered about is, how is it that he's able to travel all around the country to constantly do this? And not only him, but many of his buddies. I know that he was a real estate flipper for a while, but thanks to a lot of the really hard work that the anti-fascists have done in exposing some of these horrible people that try to live a dual life, I understand that he's no longer able to do that work. So I wonder where he's getting his money, because, you know, we did find out that, you know, not only was Breitbart funded by the billionaire hedge funder Robert Mercer, but he was also funding Milo how do you say his last name?
I honestly can't tell you either.
Milo's book tour across the country. So you have to wonder who is, besides these crazy fascists, who are the other interests that are really supporting them? Whose interests they serve?
I've wondered the same thing, and I think that, you know, he's managed to be on shows like InfoWars multiple times. He's definitely been making connections with folks on the far right that have access to, you know, large amounts of resources. So I would not be surprised to find out that he's being funded by some of those interests.
So I think there's so much to cover here that it's probably a good idea to just jump ahead to talking about what happened with the thing that everyone's talking about is the police response to this, especially targeting the left and the use of military weapons. And so maybe you could say a little bit about that, and we can get to Chief Outlaw's press conference about some of this too.
Absolutely. So on Saturday, there was a large showing of the left, and not just the folks that were organized by Pop Mob, but there was also a very large contingent that was organized by other anti-fascist groups in the city, putting a huge effort out as well. And so it was a massive coalition of leftists that all showed up and united in a way that I actually haven't seen very mm-hmm. much in Portland. And so when the Patriot Prayer folks were on the waterfront and all the leftists were opposing them on NATO, there was this back and forth of them moving up and down the waterfront trying to find a way to march, with the riot cops separating the two groups. And when it became clear that they were not going to be able to march because the left was also tracking them up and down the waterfront, the cops then launched a completely unprovoked and unjustified attack of immense and violent force against the left in an attempt to drive them away from the waterfront, and therefore allowing unpermitted and unimpeded march by Patriot Prayer in the streets. This shows a very clear favoritism of the Portland Police Force to the right, which we have seen before.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's been well documented in several news reports in both local news and national and international news is that the police were very brutal in using military weapons that's banned in most countries in the world. We even have it documented on video of showing how aggressive they were, even at journalists, right?
Absolutely. And it's unfortunate that there were so many people that were very badly injured, including the activist who got a traumatic brain injury from one of those rounds piercing his helmet, which, if he had not been wearing it, would have been a much more tragic event, because we would be talking about the fact that the police murdered an anti-fascist. So I think that the repression that we saw on Saturday is an escalation that has been happening among the police dating back for years, but we saw it also last year on June 4th, and this is just another step in their escalation of repressing the voices on the left.
And I know one of the other victims was also a 52-year-old adjunct professor who was part of the broad popular mobilization with 37 different community organizations earlier, but at that point was not really even in the thick of things. She was on a corner talking to a friend, and all of a sudden she had a flashbang grenade hit her chest and burn her arm and burn soft tissue and cause so much damage that she had to go to the hospital.
Yeah, and I think that there's also a lot of videos that show them attacking people that were walking away from them and intentionally attacking people that were trying to retreat. And prior to their launching flashbangs into the crowd indiscriminately, they were heard over the PA saying that people were throwing projectiles at the police, but as of today, no footage of this has surfaced, and nobody who was actually there saw anything of the like. So it is very clear that this was a premeditated attack and that they were actually saying these lies ahead of time to justify the attack that they knew was coming. And one of the things that I do also want to point out is that in Oregon law, the manslaughter statute states that recklessly causing another person's death in a way that shows extreme indifference to the value of human life is how our laws are written. And while they were lucky enough not to have actually caused another person's death, I would say that their attack of the crowd would actually rise to attempted manslaughter because it was definitely showed an extreme indifference to the value of human life.
And again, this is something that not only people in the anti-fascist or 37, liberal organizations, community organizations are confirming, but even journalists that were there from everywhere, from the Oregonian to the Willamette Week, etc. And let's talk a little bit about what the police chief, Chief Outlaw, what she had to say at the press conference.
Yeah, that was, wow. So, not surprisingly, she came out and defended the use of force. And one thing I want to point out is that, you know, I think that a lot of Portlanders were excited about the prospect of having a new police chief that was a woman of color. And I think that after this press conference this weekend, it is clear that she is still in keeping with the same policies of the Portland Police Bureau, which is to justify use of force, to villainize folks on the left. And they were also questioning the validity of the photos of the helmet that was pierced by a projectile. So also trying to discredit an incredibly traumatic injury to somebody that was at the hands of police. And one of the statements she made that I feel like was the most telling was when she said these weren't folks who just came to march peacefully and demonstrate and sing Kumbaya and go on their way. They came with the intent to cause some problems. And I think that what is very clear in that simple statement is that she sees demonstrators as one of two groups. They're either vicious, violent individuals who come with, as she said, the intent to harm, destroy, and tear things up, or they are somebody to be mocked and patronized. And when it was pointed out to her that there were a lot of protesters who came with that intent, she repeatedly said that they left. And when it was pointed out to her that they weren't actually, had not left, and some of those people were harmed by the police, she continued to backpedal and say that she wouldn't justify it. But she also says that people who showed up and were there and didn't disperse basically deserved the attack they got because they weren't following police orders.
Yeah, you know, this is a little bit of speculation on my part, but I really think that given that Starbucks shut themselves down for that day, and we know that during other protests in the past, Nordstrom's and all these corporate businesses like that will shut down because they're afraid of the protesters or whatever. And we also know that the Portland Business Alliance has really been pushing for more cops. And recently, they even supported the city's budget, taxing businesses more with increasing fees so that they could pay for, they wanted 52 cops, extra cops, and they got 49. And we know that one of the members of the Portland Business Alliance is Columbia Sportswear, and the CEO, you know, multimillionaire Tim Boyle, was a big donor to Wheeler's campaign, and buddy of his who wrote that editorial in Oregonian saying that we basically need more cops to sweep downtown. And I mean, Portland Business Alliance even has an entire program where they have private security, the Portland Patrol, as part of their clean and safe program that not only hires 4 extra cops that work with them, but they're all about trying to maintain an atmosphere in downtown for capitalism and for businesses that serve their interests. And so really, from their point of view, I really think that they see us as being left and anti-capitalist. And it seems like they would want the police to really crack down and terrorize us so that we stop showing up downtown and stop having these protests.
Yeah, and I think that some of that is also really evident in the Independent Police Review that came out after June 4th last year, which had quotes from people, members of the police force, saying that they actually saw the right-wing groups as more mainstream, and that they saw the protesters as violent and dangerous, and they were texting with Patriot Prayer and communicating with them throughout that action. So I don't think it is hard to imagine that that activity with them has continued, and that they also did not see any way to communicate with the left because they said they were non-hierarchical and lacked a leader. And so I think that their bias is incredibly clear. And interesting when you mention Ted Wheeler, who is obviously comes from a very wealthy family and is definitely a friend to the business community of Portland. We've seen under his leadership so much violent use of force against protesters. We saw this at May Day in 2017 when the police launched an all-out assault on a permitted march full of families and disabled folks and elderly folks and immigrants and union groups. That was, again, a completely unprovoked attack. And then we saw that again on June 4th, and we saw it again last Saturday. And it's really surprising considering when he was originally running as a mayoral candidate, he stated that he had goals to actively demilitarize the police force and encourage a culture of community engagement. And yet we've seen the exact opposite since he took the role of mayor.
Yeah, it seems like there's been more use of military weapons and just complete indiscriminate use of military weapons to terrorize people, including, well, I guess this wasn't a military weapon, but during the January presidential inauguration, there was that woman in her 60s, right, who was a nurse that was assaulted by the police. I mean, this is the kind of thing the police do over and over again in the city, and our mayor is supposed to be in charge of the police, and yet he just allows us to continue and even get worse.
Yeah, and I would say, like, his silence against these far-right groups speaks volumes. He'll refer to them in these very vague terms, like he doesn't like the people from Vancouver coming into his city, but he has yet to come out and actively denounce them as the white supremacist and far-right hate groups that they are and that they associate with. And I think that his silence on that also speaks volumes, because why, if you are a self-professed liberal or Democrat, would you not want to denounce groups that are actively associating with hate groups?
One final point I want us to cover is we clearly see that the Portland police is targeting the left and protesters. Can you say a little bit about the use of surveillance and what they're doing with taking photos of protesters and how things are different in the rest of the country?
Sure. So one of the other things that came out during the June 4th action last year was when they kettled several hundred protesters and took all of their photos with them and their photo IDs and took down their names. And the city's being sued over that by the ACLU. There's a lawsuit on behalf of the people that were kettled. And it's in the review from the Independent Review Board, they found that there was no justification for them to hold people and that they essentially violated probable cause. They don't even have any evidence to hold that group for what they were saying was disorderly conduct. And so that entire group was being held under disorderly conduct, but after reviewing all the video footage, the review board found that there's actually no evidence to support that action. And then furthermore, they took photos of all the protesters, which are still currently being stored on their police database, and they said that they will not delete them or remove them without being ordered to do so. So they basically currently have their own identification database of leftists from June 4th of last year that they can use as a reference for targeting people at future actions.
And again, that was another event where some of the people that were kettled included just everyone, including journalists.
Journalists, right? And even tourists that just happened to mm-hmm. be patronizing the businesses within the block where the kettle happened.
Yeah, so they're really a menace to public safety and to anyone except for the right-wingers. I mean, you had clearly explicit Nazis at that event. You had even a right-wing militia from Oath Keepers to Three Percenters, who some of whom even assisted in a arrest with federal police officers.
Correct. And I think that sometimes they want to point out that there have been members of Patriot Prayer that have been arrested multiple times. And we know that Tiny, who is a close associate of Joey Gibson's, has been arrested for assault on numerous occasions. But I think that it's also worth pointing out that the person who keeps getting arrested that's associated with the right-wing group also happens to be a person of color. So yeah. I find it also very interesting that the one person on the right who is consistently actually held accountable is also somebody that is from a population generally targeted by the police as well anyway.
And one last point about Tiny too is that some people say that we should be ignoring these rallies and we shouldn't show up, and that if we did that, they would just go away. But we know that, like, with Tiny, even when they haven't had rallies, they've just gone out prowling and just assaulted people of color or trans people in the streets. But one final point, what can we say to some of the critics out there or liberals who say that we should simply ignore them because the Patriot Prayer has seen this as a success and they're moving on to Seattle just in a few weeks? How do we respond to that?
I think that one of the things that history tells us is that when you turn your back on fascism and ignore it, it does not go away. It foments, it continues to grow. And there's a lot of places in history that you can point to this happening. But even if you just look at Patriot Prayer over the last year, the event on June 4th had a huge showing of counter-protesters. All of the rallies since then, up until last weekend, had less and less counter-protesters showing up. And he didn't stop. He continued to have these events even when there was less of an audience for his antics. And not only did he continue to have these events, he spent that entire year continuing to recruit more and more groups to join him at these events, including showing up with more and more Proud Boys and engaging in more violence. So even if we don't look at the historical perspective, which is very clear on this issue, even just looking at his behavior would tell you that that's absolutely not true.
Well, thank you very much. This has been the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Hyung Nam, and this is
Effie Baum.
And thank you for listening.